geeks and cinemaniacs. From the heart of Hollyweird, California, at the epicenter of all things eerie and awesome, it's time for Charles Band's Full Moon Freak Show.
Welcome back to the Freak Show for the epic finale of my interview with the immortal Rob Zombie. This week, the king of all macabre media, and I talk about rock and roll, classic horror movies, his hit riff on the immortal 60s TV sitcom The Munsters, and much, much more. Batten down your hatches for a tsunami of cool in one of the wildest Freak Show episodes yet. Are you ready? Okay, once more, here's Rob Zombie. So is that how you met Bill Moseley on Devil's Rejects?
No, I met him on the first film, House of a Thousand Corpses.
The way I met Bill Moseley was really weird
because I was at Universal Studios during Halloween. Used to have this thing called the Igor Awards. I don't know if you remember that. It was like this.
Because they would do Halloween
Horror Nights, and they had the Igor Awards.
Right.
And then they stopped all of it for a while. But back then, they were still doing it. And I guess he presented me with an award. Mm-hmm. But he was dressed as Chop Top from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Which is a good story.
Which I didn't know. Bill knows this. Afterwards, was talking to him, and I thought, "Oh wow, you do an amazing imitation of Bill Moseley as that character."
That's hilarious.
And I didn't realize it was actually him.
That is funny.
And then I didn't realize he lived like two blocks from me. And then we became friends.
Oh, how cool!
And then when I made my first movie, he was like one of the first people I called.
Bill did a movie for me back in the early '90s called Crash and Burn.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun. And then he made a kids movie that I was involved, that I made called, I think it was Prehysteria 2. And we've just stayed friends over the years.
He's great.
When the video business began to suck real bad, I created this roadshow, and I went over two, three years to 200 cities. It was kind of like a weird Ozfest. I'd show clips. We'd always do shit on stage. I'd have people come up. I'd direct. Girls would show their boobs. Today would not be a good thing, but back then it was totally fun. We brought guillotines and chopped heads off and sold merch. And Bill joined me many times, as did some of the other horror celebs like Sid Haig and William Shatner, who's been a friend for years.
Yeah.
He came and did a few of those. My son Alex Band, who had a number one hit in around the year 2000 with a band called The Calling, he came on these tours that we did. So that was fun. But as far as the movies are concerned, other than Trances, I made another weird movie that I've got to give you a copy of called Head of the Family. It's just one of my favorite.
I love the image of that.
But it's actually a really, it's a clever movie, and it appeals to me. Who the fuck knows? I made it because I wanted to make that movie.
Because
I thought, oh, we're going to be.
Well, that's what they all are, right? It appeals to me, and hopefully someone else will get on board with it.
That's what happens. So you did that, okay, and then you're doing your – so then how did – because that was – okay, so 19 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Something like
well,
that.
House of a Thousand Corpses was almost 23 years ago when I made that movie.
Oh, yeah.
But and then after Rejects did well. Like, Ebert and Roper, or maybe it was Siskel still at that point.
Right.
I remember, gave it two thumbs up,
that's
shockingly.
Great.
And that's how it got on for good or for bad, on the radar of the Weinsteins, when I did Halloween.
Oh, I didn't know that connection.
What it was, because they brought me in to have a meeting about Halloween.
So they actually, I must have gapped out. So they actually made, the Weinstein Company made the Halloween remake that you directed?
Yeah, they did the two I did for them.
That was a big success for you, right?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, Halloween.
Did someone arrive with like a big bushel of dough and shit? Was that a good thing?
The success of the movie was a good thing, and the money was a good thing, but working with the Weinsteins for three solid years was the worst time of my life.
Really?
By the time and at the time it was hard to explain, but now I think the whole world knows.
Yes, yes. There's no secrets.
I would be like, these guys are insane.
Wow. Isn't that something?
It was brutal.
Lecherous thing was spilling over into...
I mostly dealt with Bob. Uh-huh. I had very little dealings with Harvey.
Yeah,
so all that lecherous
stuff, I was not really
privy to that. I would, it was way after the fact I would hear things like that. But it was just craziness. And
just screaming and yelling weirdos.
Screaming and yelling. And I mean, at their employees, at everybody, at me. But then I would just scream and yell back. And,
really?
Oh, it was just nonstop.
Like
it was nonstop
director.
Fighting. Oh, but
like what? Give me an example, because I don't know. And I've heard stories, and I don't, crazy world.
Okay, this is a typical, Bob Weinstein way of dressing. Listen, you stupid fucking cunt. You better fucking blah, blah, blah.
What? For real?
I remember one time talking to someone who worked in his office. I go,
This
isn't how all businesses work, right? And they're like, I don't know. I started working here right out of school. I was like, Well, this is not how all jobs are. He was
That's
brutal.
That's unbelievable.
But then...
But were you in a position, because, you know, I don't know, as much as I've been up and down, and I've been like the master of my own little weird world, and I don't behave that way. No one does around me. We have a very...
No one else behaves.
We have a very chill sort of crew here. But if someone were to talk to me that way, like the way you described, I mean, unless my life depended on this person, I'd say, well, fuck you, dick, you know. But I guess you also have...
Well, no, what happened was... that was the control. That was the control they could have over people. And the first, this is a really fun one. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter anymore, but the first question Bob asked me, I met him at his hotel.
Right.
And to talk about Halloween, he goes, do you have financial troubles?
For real?
You know, he asked me, that was the first thing I go, no,
you're already on the job. I mean,
I hadn't gotten the job yet. But I could tell that's how you control people. Broke directors that you can dangle stuff. And I go, no, Bob, I have more money than I know what to do with. And I could see him go, because he's like, how am I going to fuck with this guy?
What?
Because he can just tell me to go fuck myself. And that was the relationship we had. We would be screaming at each other. We'd hang up on each other. I got into this funny thing of doing them because he would want changes on everything. So I made sure. This went on for a long time before someone figured out. Whatever he thought we were shooting that day, I had already shot it. So his schedule was always one day off from the actual schedule.
That's brilliant.
So he's like, when you get to scene 63, Michael Myers. And I'd be like, fuck, I shot that yesterday. I'm on to the next thing. And this went on for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Did he finally figure it out?
He finally figured it out, but we were so far down the road at that point. So it was always stuff like that. I remember.
That's you know.
It was just crazy.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I've been through my own weird shit, but that
it was crazy. I mean, but the one thing I will say, because I don't want to make. The one thing I did like about. Dealing with Bob, the one thing is that there was not like all this bullshit. You know, deal with okay, we're gonna talk about it, we're gonna think about it. And, like 3 years later, we're still thinking about it.
It was like bottom line.
Bob would go like, "All right, let's fucking do it," and he literally meant start tomorrow.
Did he talk that way?
Yeah,
actually?
He was like, "Hey, well, it's maybe a bad imitation, but I can't do it anymore. I haven't heard of his voice since 2009." But it was like he was really like he, you know.
Jesus Christ.
I used to have the Halloween music as the ringer when he called, and it almost got to the point that when I would hear Carpenter's score, I'd get a little pain on my side because I would just associate with he's on the phone. Because he would call me all day long on set, all day long.
This is great material for something. I mean, come on. It's
a heart attack. but this will sum it all up because I'd be like, I know whatever he tells me on Friday, he will forget by Monday.
Oh, that
because
too.
He would always, I don't know what would influence him because the one thing I will say though, when he read this script, his first notes were spot on.
Really?
Like if he'd say,
did you write it?
Yeah,
I wrote it.
But it would be something like, I think act three is boring. And I go, okay, thank you. But then here's how to fix it. I go, oh God, here we go. And that's when it would turn into insanity because it'd be by the end of the thing, Michael Myers would suddenly be a CIA agent going to run. It would just get crazy. So I just ignored all that. But
wow.
But I do remember when I showed him, when he saw the final cut of Halloween, he was like, listen, I'm not even joking. His note was, I hate every fucking thing about this fucking movie. I hate it. You have to fire your editor right now.
My God.
And then, that just shows the way they function in this negativity. When the movie came out and it was number one, he goes, no, first the movie came out. He calls me Friday morning at 10 a.m.
Right.
I go, he goes, it's not looking good. I go, are any movie theaters even open yet, Bob?
God, what a.
And then he calls me later that day. He goes, it's blowing up everywhere. We're adding additional screenings. So after it was number one, he goes to me, every frame of this movie is fucking perfect. I was like, I'm going to jump out a window.
This is an insane story. This is a great story for a kind of a weird-ass movie.
If you made a movie of the reality of it, people go like, no way.
Oh, it's not way. No, I've heard, but that's – okay. And then so Harvey was sort of in a different
Harvey
zone.
Was not involved in the first movie in any way, shape, or form. I met him at the premiere. He was there and he just said, hello, how you doing?
Okay, but part two? You made a sequel.
I made a sequel because I had a three-picture deal with Dimension, and I thought, I'm going to kill myself if I try to make three movies with this company. So I didn't do the sequel for a long time. I said, I'm not doing it. I can't go down this road again. I can't do it. And then they went to multiple directors, and all the time I kept getting these calls from agents like, will you talk to our director and tell him what he's in the store for? And they had hired, I can't remember the names, I don't even want to tell, say the people, right. But I'd go like, okay, but they're not going to like what I have to say, trust me. So I'd get on the phone with these directors and I go, here's the reality. They're going to hate everything you do and they're going to fire you.
Okay.
They're like, what do you mean? I go, I know this is going to happen. Because unless you're willing to scream back and fight, and I just, and that's why they'd go through director, right. Director. They'd go, they're on their 14th writer, and they did every single, they were brutal.
But you wound up directing the second one.
Right? I directed the second one because.
Was it the same thing, yelling and screaming?
It was worse.
It was
worse.
How did it get worse?
Because I stupidly.
It can't get worse.
Well, I stupidly thought to myself, the first one was a big success. So maybe they'll go, okay.
Let him do his thing.
Right. No, it was 10 times worse because they acted as if. One time he came, I'm not even joking. He came down to Atlanta where we were shooting. He came on set. I didn't even know he was there yet. And a couple of the girls were in the movie were in tears. I go, why is everyone crying? And I realized that Bob Weinstein had walked in, and one of the girls was like, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm playing such-and-such. He goes, I don't give a fucking shit. Get out of my face. And they start crying, which to me was like, yeah, that's exactly what I expected would happen.
That is, I can't.
And he comes to the set. He comes to the monitors. He goes, I want to show you something. This is what we're looking for. And I go, oh, God, what's he going to show me? He shows me the trailer for My Halloween.
Okay, the first one.
I go, who the fuck do you think made that movie,
right,
Bob?
Right, right.
That's what we want. I go, ay, ay, ay.
That's unbelievable. It was, these stories are, I mean,
it
I've never
sounds
heard,
like I'm making them up.
No, 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 no. Every word I know
up was
true.
Down, left was right. It was just cuckoo time all the time.
Now, did you have to do a third movie? Did you do a third movie?
No, or? No. I would rather never even watch. I mean, because when I did Halloween 2, I said, I'll do this movie if you tear up my deal. So I never have to work with you again.
Oh. Now, no, I mean, again, this does not happen in Hollywood. I mean, that you're asking them to tear up the third movie, but you went through torture. So
yeah,
fuck.
So they did. I did it, and I got out.
Part of the negotiation
my
was
negotiation
not
was
doing
that
the
I
next
never
movie.
Work with you again.
That is unbelievable. Yeah, so, what a fucking amazing
yeah,
story.
Yeah, and then the next day after 2 came out, they announced 3, of which they never made.
Oh, okay. And then they ran out of whatever.
Then they lost the rights.
Lost the rights.
I actually know someone who was working. This is really funny, too. They were working on the follow-up. And then one day they got a call that they had finished a script and they found out, oh, they just realized they don't have the rights to this movie.
Oh, Jesus. Right?
So all the work they'd been doing was for nothing.
It's so weird. And it's weird for me hearing these stories since, you know, when I started, you know, some years into my bizarro career, John Carpenter was a friend.
Yeah.
And we both made 2 movies exactly at the same time. I've told the story before, but I don't think you know it. So I was making a movie called Tourist Trap with Chuck Connors, and he was making Halloween, which at the time was called The Babysitter Murders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were friends for years because he helped me on my first weirdo movie. So we were shooting literally blocks away from each other. And I was like, yeah, come to my set because I've got a $400,000 movie. Yours is only 3. I was fooling around. And I've got Chuck Connors. You got some daughter of some star thing or chick.
Funny.
And we did that. And then, of course, to his credit, Irwin Yablons, who was both of our distributors.
Oh, was? Okay.
Yeah. He came up with the title Halloween.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And it was, I mean, our film did okay. It was respected, but his film launched the career.
Yeah, Halloween is just psycho. It's like crazy. It just never ends.
It never ends. It never ends because people just, the new generations and, well, you helped feed it. You made some really good shows. I like your Halloween.
I mean, it worked out great. I mean, it was like, because I know that the last Halloween before that was like, Halloween Resurrection or something hadn't
like
done
that,
well, and there was
right.
I know that it had stagnated for a long time because when I came on board, unfortunately, they had written 1 million scripts and had sunk so much money, so all that went against the cost of my movie.
Oh, interesting.
So my above the line was
plus
a joke.
Well, I'm still thinking of your good impression of Bob.
Well, this is my last Bob story. We were.
No, tell more. These are so.
I forget.
Come
what
on,
we were,
these are entertaining because people.
Oh,
know,
I'll tell you.
Listen, your name also made the remake of Halloween a success. I think that was a huge component. Aside from the movie being a good, kind of an interesting spin, you know, Rob Zombie Halloween, I think, was what they needed.
Well, it was funny at the time because when I had the meeting, they just had Halloween. They weren't looking for a remake or anything. They were like, they didn't even care if Michael Myers was in the movie. They weren't even looking to go down that road.
Oh, interesting.
The remake part was my idea because I thought, there's so many sequels. The movie's gone. It's gone every which way.
Right,
Let's just start over.
Yeah, good idea.
And then I had watched, you know, John's movie a bazillion times, and I was kind of like looking at it like, okay, well, what? Because sometimes you know the movie so well, you sort of imagine things that aren't there. And go, oh, well, they don't really show the sanitarium. They don't really show his childhood. They don't really show. I thought like, oh, I'll just sort of show the stuff that they don't really show that are, you know, that's in the mythology that you never really saw. But
you're gonna tell one more Bob story.
I know this is the best one. I'm trying to remember if this was Halloween 2 or Halloween. Doesn't really matter. I've since apologized to this guy. I feel really bad about it. But he had this. he had his sort of assistant, and what they would do was they would set up these test screenings, of course, like always.
Yeah.
But I could tell they were fake. They were bullshit. I mean, maybe the people coming were real, but it's like because Bob would have like, here's all the like, here's the 50 things I want changed about the movie. And then we'd screen the movie, and then at the end of the thing, like the guy that would be running the focus group would somehow be like, oh, it's real interesting how this audience is exactly pinpointing the 50 bizarro things that you want me to change. And I was sitting there, I was so fed up with it all, and the guy from Dimension was sitting in the seat in front of me, and I was like, I know what you're fucking doing, you fucking piece of shit. I know you're here just pushing Bob's fucking agenda.
But you're sounding like Bob now.
I know. That's how I was talking. And I was like, and he was like getting all like scared, and he kind of started crying. And I was like, I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm not doing any shit. So I feel bad. They just pushed me to the edge. I was like a psychotic person. And the next day, I thought the phone rings and it's Bob. I go, Bob is going to be so fucking pissed because I did this. He starts laughing on the phone. He goes, I love it. You tore my boy a new asshole. You're an animal just like me. I fucking love it. And then he hung up. I go, oh, my God.
Is that when you apologize?
The worst behavior I ever had in my life. And this is when he finally thinks
you got
I'm
accolades from the
It's
big.
All bad. That's I hate even talking. I haven't talked about it in like a decade.
It's a very good story.
It's horrible.
Well, you know, you're driven to a point where it's just, you know, you're in that morass of bullshit anyway.
So everybody hated it. I mean, it filtered down to everybody, the crew, the actors. I mean, it made everybody miserable all the time.
So not a peaceful, fun, like,
No,
set.
It could have been great. And it was like, it was difficult. And they would do weird shit too, where like, like you're 2 days from shooting, you have to cut 2 weeks out of the schedule. And you know how tight schedules are.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what?
And I think that was another movie, like, cut all this out. I go, no, I'll just shoot 12 pages a day. I'm not cutting it out. Right, I don't even make any fucking sense if I use your notes.
That's unbelievable. What a nightmare. I'm glad you survived. And so then did Salem's Lot come some years later? I get my timelines.
Let's see.
Wasn't that the next show that you did, or am I wrong?
Yeah, The Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem.
Yeah,
Lords of Salem's
Lot. That would have been good. Yeah, that was the one. Well, what happened was I had spent all those years doing the stuff for the Weinsteins, which was a nightmare.
Wow.
And that's when Jason Blum was just starting up.
Right,
he had done Insidious.
Okay, Insidious.
Hadn't done too much yet with his company. And his thing was like, I give you the money, I don't get involved at all. At all.
Okay. How did that sound?
I go, that sounds good. So I was like, okay, I have this crazy witch movie, Lords of Salem. I mean, the budget was low and it was a fast shoot, but I was like, I will go with the nobody getting involved thing because really when I finished Halloween 2, I was like, I hate movies.
Oh,
I don't ever
want to
make movies again. I don't even want to watch movies. I hate every.
Well, that experience
made everything was so awful.
Right.
And Lords of Salem was kind of like the exact opposite. Like we can do any crazy thing we want to do. And
so that restored a bit of your.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, we could make something that isn't. I mean, I don't think Jason was real thrilled because it wasn't a conventional Blumhouse movie. It was more like this bizarro Ken Russell weirdo art movie.
Yeah, but you made your movie. I mean, you have a style. You made your movie.
Yeah, and then, that kind of.
Who was in it? I completely lost my
A lot of people were in it, like Judy Geeson was in it, Meg Foster and Patricia Quinn.
I worked with Meg.
Yeah, he probably worked with everybody. Yeah,
well, that's pretty cool. So there's that, and then what? I'm sort of blanking on. I mean, I know we've got to talk a little bit about the Munsters, which I want to see. I haven't seen it yet. Anyway, and we talked a little bit about weird that it didn't have a theatrical, which is the new world we're in. But you know,
the Munsters. Yeah, we can just jump to the Munsters. The other stuff, The non-theatrical is a bummer, but it was sort of like – it was already structured in the deal before I came along.
Really?
Because the Munsters had already been pre-sold to Netflix.
Oh, okay.
So whatever happened, that's where it was going.
But how did you get involved in that? Because that's – It's such a departure in a way.
When I was at Universal, I shot my first film, House of a Thousand Corpses, at Universal before they kicked me out. Right. And Stacy Snyder, who was the chairman of Universal at the time, said, oh, any ideas? Because they hadn't seen my movie yet, so they still thought they wanted to work with me. Right. And she said, any ideas on what you want to do next? And I said, I would love to do The Munsters, because that property had just stagnated forever. They had, you know, made a TV movie and hadn't done anything with it.
So you're aware that they had those rights? Obviously it was there.
Yeah, I mean, because like right down the street was the original Munsters house. I mean, painted nicely, but it was still sitting on the back lot.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And but the rights were tied up with other producers and directors, so I just forgot about it. And then I got booted out of Universal, so I really forgot about it. And in 2016, I was editing my movie called 31, and my producer I was just talking on the phone. I go, what are you doing next, Mike? And he goes, oh, I'm working on The Munsters. I was like, what the fuck?
Wait a minute.
He's like, yeah, well, it's just this quickie, cheapo little kids movie that they're shooting, making at Universal. It's aimed at like 2-year-olds. It's in the direct-to-video division.
Oh, okay.
He goes, it's going to be a piece of shit.
People are loving this Hollywood talk.
Oh, right? No, but that's how everyone talks. He goes, the director doesn't give a shit. The script's terrible. You know, it's going to be awful. I was like, get me in there for a meeting.
Right.
And I got in there for a meeting, and that was like the beginning of the 5-year journey with the movie.
5 years.
Yeah, and then it would be like, okay, we're kind of working on it, and then to go, oops, the Munsters reverted back to the television department. And then that's when Seth Meyers, you know, the late night host, said he was producing, I guess, a remake of the Munsters for television.
Okay.
And then that was in all the trades, so I was like, oh, there it goes, and it slipped away again. And then that didn't happen for reasons I don't know anything about.
Right, right.
And then I was working on my next movie. I was editing 3 from Hell, the sequel to Devil's Rejects.
Right.
And the same producer's like, I think the Munsters is back in play. And I go, look, I don't even want to hear about this anymore.
Wow.
Tell me when it's real.
Right.
He's like, I think it's real. So we went back into Universal again for more meetings. Jesus. And
see, I don't have the patience for that.
Meeting
with those people is just, oh my God.
Oh no, it's everything about it sucks. And then it was kind of real, but still, it's just like that. It's like I said, that's why I like Weinstein, when they say yes, it's yes. Let's have 5,000 more meetings for the next 3 years and nitpick nonsense.
Right.
But that's just, you know, it's the corporate world. Yeah. It's not fun. It's like sucks the life and it sucks your soul dry.
But then somehow you got back in that.
But I got back in the groove, and we were getting I went to, you know, Budapest and location scouting and did all the stuff. And we were gearing up, and then freaking COVID comes along and shuts everything down again.
Had you started shooting?
No, but we had started working. Like, they were building sets. And
I heard
Budapest
some good stories from Cassandra Peterson. She was in here a few
weeks.
Oh, was
she? Okay,
she is such an interesting chick. I mean, aside from Elvira.
Her life is nuts.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. And I think it's one of the more entertaining.
She should write a book about it.
Oh, she did, and it's actually a good book.
I read it. It's nuts. Anyway, I don't know. At some point, it was go.
Right.
And we did it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that was many weeks, though. That was no 30-day deal, right? That was a long schedule.
That was 32 days.
Well, okay. Oh, really? Okay. That's not bad.
No, I mean, it was
Oh, but you had to start and stop it because of the COVID thing.
Yeah,
right?
32 days is still rough to make a movie of that scope, because the thing with a movie like that, unlike, is that like everyone's in makeup. So nothing is real.
Right.
So you can't just, let's just go shoot it there. Yeah. Well, we can't. Everything has to be period appropriate to everything we're doing. Everyone's makeup's constantly being touched up. Everyone's spending.
Well, you should invent something awesome. You have to do that. Just something that's just.
Guy walks down the street in 2020 movie. But the crews in Hungary were fantastic.
Yeah.
It was just slower than I had ever worked before, just because the language barrier and different things made it slow.
In the early 90s, I was the first American producer to go to Romania right after the fall of Ceausescu.
Yeah.
And fell in love with the country. We made Subspecies, and then those movies were doing really well. Then I teamed up with some Romanian producer, the husband and wife team. We built a studio there, Castel Studios, which by the end of that decade I sold. But we made about 150 movies in Romania, and that was a great experience.
That's the way to do it.
Real amazing production value for very little money. It was not about saving money. It was about me stretching our dollars and making a better film with more, running time,
shooting
schedule. So, and, Budapest and Bucharest, pretty close. So I never went to Budapest, but I hear it was similar. Like
Budapest really is amazing. It's kind of like Paris almost, the city. We loved it. I mean, fortunately, when we got there, everything was closed down.
Right.
And our entire cast was sequestered in this little hotel.
For how long was that?
3 months.
3 months?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. What a nightmare.
So it was kind of like...
You too? You were there like stuck for 3 months?
Yeah. Everybody was. The whole cast was living together. Every once in a while, like a person like Cassandra, who wasn't working, that would come into our bubble.
Right.
And she'd be there a week or 2 weeks and then leave. But for all the main people were stuck.
Now that sounds... But nothing sounds worse than Bob Weinstein. I mean, those.
Well, nothing is.
And
worse.
Your impression is so fucking good. maybe we'll end with another.
Semi accurate.
No, but it's actually. Very,
he always
very
talked
good.
Like when he called me the rap. It's Bob.
Oh, yeah. I can relate to almost everything we talked about, but not that. Luckily, I've not had that human in my life. Because I've done my own thing, and when things get shitty for me, as they have. You make a few less movies and you hunker down and you sell stuff to get money and then things get a little better. So I didn't quite ever have that experience. I mean, as a kid in Italy, I grew up, my dad made movies. First spaghetti, well, not first epics with Steve Reeves and then spaghetti westerns with all these, wonderful actors like Robert Ryan and Joseph Cotten. And they would come over. And during that time, the 60s, it almost was a badge of honor to be a real hot-headed, dramatic actor and scream and yell and throw tables over and dinner. And so it was kind of like not a badge of honor. It was just what you kind of expected, the drama. Today, that's way calmed down. So I saw as a kid crazy shit that I didn't even understand why. It would be like once we went to a restaurant, this is in Rome, beautiful, 8,000 pieces of silverware and cutlery. And one of the actors on one of these movies, and my dad's, he got pissed off at something. Maybe he was pissed off at another actor. And he literally stood up yelling and screaming, and he tipped the table over, and shit flew everywhere. And everyone kind of calmed down, and they cleaned it up. And then he sat down again, and we started. It was like fucking crazy
shit. Yeah, it's not like that anymore.
But other than that, I've not had your Bob Weinstein experience.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The Bob one was weird.
Especially
sometimes
in the creative
it was
world. You're trying to be creative, dude.
Ugh, it just wore you out.
It was exhausting. There's nothing there.
You spend more time just fending off the dragon than working
on
a movie.
That's
So, now I always ask when I'm making a movie, I'm like, what is this actor like?
Right.
And if anyone's like, well, I go, no, I don't want him.
Right.
I don't have time for any drama.
Well, I've worked with the two craziest ones is Gary Busey. I worked with Gary.
And, oh, really? I wouldn't have thought that would have been.
And Klaus Kinski. And Klaus Kinski.
The classic crazy actor.
Was dangerous in the sense that he could and possibly would stick a knife in you. I mean, Busey was completely out of his mind, but much like the way Italians yell, they don't really come to blows. So with Busey, I thought, okay, no matter what,
was this after his motorcycle accident?
Yes. Yes.
Because pre-motorcycle accident, you go back and watch movies like Straight Time and stuff, I'm like, he's so good.
He's amazing.
Such a great
actor. He's a great singer, songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
He's all that. And he
was
cool. He was
course,
a cool Buddy guy. Hollister. He just was running around grabbing boobs. It was like out of control, bizarre. I made a movie called The Ginger Dead Man. And the only way I could afford him, because my budgets are like nothing, was he loved the script for some odd reason because it was kind of a novel idea. So it's about a guy who goes into a bakery and kills people. and then he gets sent to the electric chair and his witchy grandma gets the ashes and puts him in the gingerbread batter. And the poor young girl who's been my girlfriend for now 19 years, Robin Sidney, she's chased around by a pissed off little cookie with the voice of Gary Busey. And in that one day that I worked with him, not even, it was 8 hours in the diner because the rest of it was just his voice. I could afford him for a day. It was like $25,000, I think. For that one day, I mean, I got 8 or 9 really good Gary Busey stories, including literally, I warned all the girls on the set. I said, you know that he's going to grab your boobs. And then all that actually happened. Then he disappeared at a certain point. He demanded a trailer. We gave him a trailer. He asked for, or his handler asked for a huge tray of candy, Mars bars and all that shit. And then there was a point where the young girl was missing and he was missing. People were freaking out. I went into his trailer and half the candy was eaten. It was like I don't even know how.
Maniac.
It was just a wild, wild fucking crazy experience.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also kind of in a fun spirit. I never felt anybody was in. Well, today be different. I guess the booby grabbing would be.
It would be done instantly and you'd be done with it.
probably be over. All right. So now we're today. You got the Munsters out there on Netflix. I got to see it. I'm sure it's a lot of fun. Of course, I didn't grow up watching the TV show because I grew up not here. So I never saw any.
Yeah, that was like funny shooting in Hungary. No one knew what the hell it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
Isn't
they didn't know what it
funny?
Was. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, yeah. I mean, but your art director, was he from here? They came, or was it also local?
No, it was this girl called Yutzi that I met, that I hired in Hungary, and she went back and watched all the episodes.
Yeah.
And of course, researched.
She designed the sets.
She was fantastic. I mean, we rebuilt. Right. This is the people. Why'd you shoot in Hungary? Because I wanted to shoot it on the Universal backlot where the original house was and restore it back to the Munsters.
Crazy money. I'm sure.
Crazy money. So we went into just an empty lot on the back lot at MA Film in Budapest, in Hungary, and rebuilt the entire neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
Paved a street, graded the whole thing, rebuilt the Munsters house and all the houses around it.
How cool.
Cheaper than we could shoot for one day on the Universal back lot, which seems cuckoo. The house is identical. It looks
amazing.
Perfect. I mean,
and it's still probably standing there.
It's still staying there. I'm
probably
sure they don't know what to
do. Porno there now. You never
know. Well, you know what's going to happen is we now built the only America Street in that country.
Oh, wow.
Because when you want to find, because when I had to find a street that looked like, most of the movie takes place in Transylvania,
right,
so I could use all the castles.
Right.
But at the end, when they come to America, nothing over there looks like America.
Right. No, I know.
I could fake streets that look like Paris and everything. So now we have the only, it's probably going to be in every freaking Mentos commercial you ever see or something.
We had a 100-acre facility. We built 7 sound stages. And the first street I built was a Western street because I made a movie called Oblivion, but it was a Western sci-fi with some interesting.
Is that what George Takei was doing?
Yeah. Boy, you know all this shit. Jesus Christ. Anyway, and then we built the typical American street, a couple of them. And then we made all these movies. And of course, you had to rework the street a little color, different angle. But yeah, the same street is in like 100 movies I've made.
I love that idea. I mean, that's what I watch like Hammer films,
fine.
And you're like, there it is again. He's crossing the same bridge. But
exactly.
It's awesome because this thing of like building stuff and tearing it down. I'm like, why don't we just make? I mean,
ridiculous.
I tried doing that even with the Halloween movies at first. I said, Bob, you know you're going to make a 2. This is early in the process before I wanted to kill myself. I was like, why don't we just shoot like 1 and 2 back to back?
Oh, you actually proposed
why do we
that?
Want to break it down, send everyone home, wait, they wouldn't do it. And what happened was exactly like I predicted. You know, you send everybody off.
Right.
The kid who played little Michael Myers grew up and he didn't work anymore. And it would have been just so easy to just like extend the schedule and
I've done
knock
that
out two films.
On a few shows, like Subspecies. We made Subspecies, which was really cool. And I thought, and this wonderful director, a good friend of mine, Ted Nicolau, he was like, we called him Agent Nicolau because he was sent to Romania to make the first American-Romanian movie since, I mean, the place was scary. Not for me. I loved it. But, you know, there was very few lights on. There were mortar holes, shells. I mean, there was just a revolution. And we're there. And the U.S. government said, you know, what I don't know what the advisory is called, but don't go there, you know, because it was great. And slowly it became super-duper awesome. But it was such a good experience, and Subspecies did so well. And we needed to make a movie a month. That was my sort of commitment to Paramount. So I said, Ted, you got to go back and let's shoot Subspecies 2 and 3.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's like.
And it worked out great.
It's hard to get people to commit to that unless you're making a Harry Potter movie or something. And they're like, what do we know?
But it actually worked out terrific. And now, ironically, then we made about 8 years later Subspecies 4, which was cool. And then we always wanted to make sort of the backstory of this character, Radu, and call it Subspecies Blood Rise. And it took 26 years to finally be able to find a place to do it and afford to make it. We just wrapped it a couple of weeks ago. So we shot it in Serbia, which went really well. It was similar locations and castles, and Romania became too expensive. So, 26 years later. And, of course, you had to deal with people aged a little bit. But we wrapped that into the script. But I've got a good house location story apropos the same street and shooting a movie on the same in the same location. So I've made a gazillion movies. And probably I don't know the exact math, but of these 360, 70 films, I probably needed a haunted house or an old haunted sort of house environment for 50 of them.
Yeah.
So what did I do for all these years? I would either build it on a stage when I had money, like I had the ex-Dino De Laurentiis Studios. I owned those for a brief period of time in the 80s. We would build the set for From Beyond and then the set for Troll, and we keep rebuilding the same fucking old house. And here in L.A., wherever I'm shooting, we go downtown. We're always renting, and usually not cheap for our little shows, the interior of a big old haunted house. So finally, during COVID, it's a long story, but the shortest version is I got wind of some opportunities in Cleveland, Ohio, which I've never been to in my life. Maybe I went there once when I did that tour, my roadshow thing. And I didn't realize Cleveland was the wealthiest city in the country back at the turn of the last century. There were amazing neighborhoods there like Beverly Hills, but stuff was available super cheap. So I went there for a different reason, and I met someone, and on my way to the airport, this gal, this real estate agent says, you know, I told her, I said, if you ever find a house that's really cheap, I don't care if it's haunted, but really big, you know, and all fucked up, or I don't care if it's a fixer-upper, I want to buy that.
Because
I know I'm going to need it for 8,000 different movies. So she actually said, you know, there is a place. It's got some legal entanglements. But if you have the time on the way to the airport, let me take you and show you this house. And it was in a place called Cleveland Heights, which is like was the Beverly Hills of Cleveland. All the homes are 8,000 to 15,000 square foot homes. I mean, gorgeous and fucking architecturally amazing. And she took me to this house, which definitely needed some work. And I persevered. And about 6 months later, I managed to buy it. And we got it functioning. And now in the last 14 months, I've shot 9 movies there.
Yeah.
Now, not all there. I mean, no, but, you know, but it was, I don't know amazing. Why I didn't do this fucking in the 70s, you know? You know, it's like.
I know. It's crazy, like in some of these places, what you can buy. I mean, I remember was Cleveland also. There's the house that they used in A Christmas Story.
Okay.
And you can visit it. It's all fixed up. Right, it's a tourist attraction, but it's in a shit neighborhood.
Right.
And some of the other places were for sale, and we looked it up. I go, you could buy this entire street cheaper than a crappy house in California.
Exactly.
You know, like, you could literally own the entire street because the houses are probably like 20 grand because they're just shacks.
They're shacks. It's changing now, but I'll tell you later. I don't want to get into this because we're talking about real estate.
They tuned out when we were talking about food. Now they're like real estate.
No, you got to come back. You got to bring Bob back for a minute to get him to pay attention. All right. So as we wrap this amazing fucking time spent, and I could keep talking, but I know there's most people, if they're listening to the podcast, it's their drive time, you know.
They're at their destination now, is what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a part fucking drinking coffee.
Get to the point. This is me, every podcast I listen to, I'm like, get to the point.
But, okay, so right now, okay, literally, what, tomorrow you're going to perform?
Yeah, I have a show tomorrow in Sacramento. That's it. That wraps up my touring for the year.
Wow. So what describe the show for those people who don't know. I mean, it's what kind of venue? Is there an opening act?
I mean, I toured all summer. Outdoor amphitheaters. I mean, I wrapped up a big tour. So it's like, you know, those amphitheaters, like 15,000 seats
amazing.
Or something.
That's amazing.
This is a festival, so that'll be even bigger. Maybe it's 40,000 people or so.
Wow.
Bunch of bands, and it's kind of like we always call them a one-off. You know, it's just not connected to any other tour. It was just a one-off thing. Agreed to do. And yeah, no, it's a big show. I mean, it's all giant video and pyro and giant robots and all this nonsense.
Cool. Send me, because just so you know, when people listen to this, it'll be next week. Because usually we're really quick. And then about a week later, it'll be people can watch it. You and I'll watch it. It'll be fun. So there's a little time. So send me something about the show. I can put it on this little thing we're doing. Just a clip, a promo, something. So it's a visual. That would be cool just for people who don't know, like me.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be something.
Anything.
I'll remember the film. If I don't, someone on YouTube will remember.
Exactly. That is for sure.
Yeah, everything will be
so
there.
You're doing that. Is there a moment where you say, okay, I got a week. I can just like chill a little bit? Because you're married now for many years.
Yeah. We've been together for almost 30 years.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
And I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm always planning like the next everything. I don't think I'll get to another movie until after like next year or something.
Yeah, well, October.
I mean, the Munsters was full on. Five years total, but three.
Well, plus you had
solid
the 3 month
years.
Like freaking you're frozen time for 3
yeah,
months.
Yeah, I mean that was
for you especially with your touring and your. I mean, you just
So I need a break. Even it's funny though, you spend all those years on a movie, and it's the day it comes out. Someone goes, "So what's your next movie?" I'm like, can this just sit here for 5 minutes?
You got to do that. You know, as we, I say this all the
what
time.
Else you got?
What else you got? Exactly. But as you get, again, I got to say this, and I know I'm repeating myself, but. In Italy, the concept of retirement doesn't exist. It exists in this country. You hit an age and fuck that.
Yeah.
So in Italy, you get, and they don't even say older. They just say more mature.
Yeah.
So as we get more mature, right, I mean, you got to find a way to give yourself a little more time, you know, just take that breath.
I mean,
I'm driven too, but, you know, there's got to be a few days here and there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm ready to just, like, take... I never really take time off, though.
I don't either, but I hate, trained myself recently.
I try to, like, be more relaxed and not be stressed. I don't stress about stuff like I used to.
Right, good.
But there's always another project. There's another record planned or another tour, another movie. Right. Like, it's usually, you know, you know, you have years planned ahead. And I'm like, oh, crap, it's almost 2027. How am I going to get this done? You know, because it's like amazing how fast time seems
Well, you don't need a lot of time. You need just 48 hours where you can unplug. You know, unplugging is the toughest part of it. It's not for me. I mean, I'm pretty balanced, but I'm also driven. I have 8 million things I'm doing. But it's nice to actually, even for 10 hours, just fucking.
I know. It's hard, though. It's like, especially, that's the curse of when you get to do like what you love for a living.
You're so right.
You know, it's not like, I'm not thinking about plumbing until tomorrow morning when I go back to work.
Right.
It's like you don't lay awake at night thinking, well, maybe you do. But, but when it's what you love, you're like, okay, well, I don't know what to do because this is the stuff I love doing. So I'm like, because I can't even just sit and watch a movie without me going like, you start thinking.
Well,
it's hard to really
unplug. That's a great
thing
you brought up because I'm obviously a big movie fan, fanatic. And it's for me, it's the test of a good movie that it pulls me out of all my baloney.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like you just, and just takes you into, and that happens from time to time. There aren't many good movies like that recently that I can remember that you sit and go, wow, I was, fuck, I just had the best 90 minutes
I don't really do that so much with new movies. It's more old stuff.
Old stuff.
You know, that'll be like, we'll get on a trip with like watching all of them. We'll go, okay, we're going to watch all 16 Basil Rathbone Sherlock Holmes in a row. You know, then we're going to watch all the Thin Man movies and we'll just go through the, we try
like
to do that a lot.
Binge City. That's awesome. Well, those are, most people are probably not aware of them. And then,
those make me not think about current problems
stuff.
Because they just have no, they're
but
so movie-ish.
You made such a great point about if you're doing something you love, you're always plotting and scheming.
Yeah.
And that sounds wrong, but you're thinking about, and it's a blessing because it's not like, things are fucked up, but it's hard to clear your head so that you don't wake up at 5:30 in the morning and
really hard.
That first thought comes into your brain, no, and then
especially
boom.
When you're working on it, the first thought in the morning is like, oh, if I change that scene and move it there.
Exactly.
You never stop. It never freaking stops.
That's true. Well, poor us, we're here making movies and you have an incredible freaking great career. I've been so looking forward to meeting you. I'm going to schmaltz out for a minute.
Okay.
I can't help it. So, as I said earlier, I'm in my bubble. I'm not aware of a lot. I mean, I've just making movies. I'm like a movie making.
I'm like
dude.
A bubble guy too, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm in my bubble, and I'm somewhat knowledgeable about some stuff. Otherwise, and over the many years, whether it was because of House of a Thousand Corpses and Sid Haig and Bill Moseley, and then seeing those movies with my kids, adults. I've always been a fan. I thought, this guy's amazing. And I wasn't too aware of your music career, although everyone here is like, oh, my God, it's Rob Zombie. And then I read a bit, and I thought, fuck, this guy is just, you've stayed healthy, I mean.
Try.
It's critical. I mean, I'm 90. I'm still doing, no, I'm not 90. But I'm
not, I was going to say, holy shit.
I mean, I've been doing this since the early 70s. And people ask, well, how, you still look like you're pretty in good shape.
Yeah,
I said, well. Maybe it's an obsession, but, I drink on occasion. I never did any drugs. I'm just devoted to what I'm doing, and I've been, and I've had some really fucked up, shitty times. I have a book I'm going to give you after this called. This is not it because this is I'm going to sign it. This is called Confessions of a Puppet Master.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, well, fun. It's, good.
I love books like that.
Yeah, it's HarperCollins came to me. And they said, hey, we heard about your crazy life. And this was during COVID, so I had the time to spend with this amazing writer, biographer named Adam Felber. He used to be the head writer of the Bill Maher Show for 11 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a connection with Bill Maher because I put him in his first movie called Cannibal Women and the Avocado
Jungle.
He always
mentions that on the show.
Yes, he does.
Not always, but it comes up every once in a while.
It does. Because people tease him. They say, hey, look at this movie you're in. So fucking forgot my trend of thought. Just live healthy and, try to do your thing. I'm running out of good words. Come on, do Bob Weinstein for a minute. Just come on.
Oh, God.
I'll be you.
Okay. Wait, but I will say, I mean, I love Malcolm.
Yeah. Oh, me
and
too.
And I love, I mean, ever since I saw Clockwork Orange, if anyone deserves to go back and be given the Oscar for that year, it's Malcolm. I love Malcolm's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
But Malcolm is great at sticking it to people. And I can't remember.
Oh, real? I don't know the story.
I remember because when we were negotiating his deal for Halloween 2, he did an appearance somewhere, not at a convention, but I mean it was some award ceremony or something.
Right.
And he said something about the Weinsteins that was really bad. And I got back to him and he was trying to close his deal on Halloween 2 was close to impossible. Right. We did it, but it was because they were so pissed. He's great though. Malcolm is
great. I saw him recently and we go back. He did a movie for me back during the amazing Italy days, and every time I run into him, and that Clockwork Orange, I mean, it's one of the great, look,
it only Stanley gets better.
Kubrick, I mean, fucking incredible director. I mean, his movies, I mean, The Shining to me is still one of the greatest horror movies ever made, and I love Stephen King, and he's written about me in a couple of his books, and I love that, and I know the whole thing about The Shining, but boy, what an incredible film. What an incredible movie.
Incredible movies that will never happen again because no one will ever be allowed to do that. Because, I don't mean that to take away, I think Stanley Kubrick's a genius, but I mean, like, no one will give anyone that anymore.
Maybe not.
Where you go like, oh, his schedule for that one scene was longer than my entire shooting schedule. Because Malcolm would tell me about it, because we'd talk about Clockwork a lot. And he'd tell me, like, the Singing in the Rain scene.
Right.
He goes, we'd come in one day and shoot the whole thing. Stanley would go, I don't like it. I'd come back the next day. The set's totally different. We'd shoot a whole nother scene. He'd go, eh, it's not good. And he said, one thing he told me is that he goes, whenever Stanley couldn't figure out what to do, he'd go, Malcolm, you're not going to be feeling well tomorrow. You're too sick to come to work. And they would shut down with Malcolm pretending to be sick.
Oh, my
until
God.
Until Stanley figured out the scene.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Imagine doing that now.
You'd be... No, you can't. Especially if you're working for Bob Weinstein.
I forget about
him. Well, thank you. I got to shake your hand, dude.
So
you
nice
are,
to
you
be
are
here.
Very
thanks
inspiring,
for having me.
Dude.
Oh, thanks. So are you. I mean, I only made 9 movies. You made 9,000.
Well,
I saw your resume out there. Most people don't even watch that many movies, let alone make them.
It's okay. We're you know, lucky in so many ways. And I don't know.
I know. I like the complaining stories because they're funnier.
No, the best.
Sitting here talking about like how great everything is. People get bored.
No, listen, I went to fucking jail for a weekend. Read the book. I mean, there's been shitty times, so it's not all good and awesome. And unlike you, where you said, which I really appreciated, that you've made that $5,000 and you didn't want to be poor again, so you're always very careful. I have my discipline, but I'm in a business where three things go wrong and you're funding your own movie, suddenly you have no money.
That's rough.
So, you know, I've had, it's much better. And the irony, I got to point this out just for the fuck of it. The irony is that even though the business is not like it used to be, and I used to make movies in 35 and screenings, and it's a whole different matrix. This is the first time for the last 4 or 5 years where I've at least been comfortable because I've got this library and it's all on streaming and there is a revenue stream. It's like I've never in my 47 years of making movies had a steady cash flow. Never existed.
Oh, really?
Ever. No, I mean, it's, you know, you make a movie, great money, you spend it, fuck the guy, the thing, the business changed. No, and now suddenly with streaming, even though, again, it's, I can tell you what I don't like about it as it relates to what we talked about earlier. And, you know, business used to, the business is not open for the filmmakers, these movies like Halloween and those kind of movies by independent filmmakers are not getting made right now because there's no money at that level, you know. So either you somehow wiggle into this big studio system and you make a multi-million-dollar movie, but there's no money anymore to make the, with the video business, and I thrived on that for many years, you know, you make a clever small movie, you spend the right amount of money, you ship 50, 60,000 units of whatever, VHS or DVDs, and you get paid. You go, well, I made some money. Those days are gone, which is unfortunate for the moment and for the John Carpenters of the
world.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all or nothing. It's like either it's $2 million or it's $200 million, but like someone giving you like $30 million to make something.
Right.
I mean, not that everyone ever gave me $30 million, but
right.
I always ask the question, what's the amount of money that I can have that you will leave me alone? And it seems to be $4 million is about the amount where they'll leave you alone. After you go over that, they start bothering you.
Everyone listen to this, okay? $4 million is the number.
I don't know. That's probably down to two now, but at one point, that's what it was.
Rob, thank you again.
Thanks
You're
again
awesome.
For having
thank
me.
Thank you. See you guys later.
Stay tuned.
That's it for this week. Remember to follow The Freak Show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. And be sure to watch our video version of the show on Full Moon Features and Full Moon's Amazon Prime channel. See you dudes next time.